Welcome back to Don't Cut a Book Club. My name is Luke.
My name is Dan.
Today we are finishing up Fourth Wing by Rebecca Yarros. Mm-hmm. Pretty spicy, this section.
This section was incredibly spicy.
A little spicy. Before we talk book, though, mm-hmm. I have a little thing that I want to get off my chest. A little warm-up that I'm going to do that's unrelated to Fourth Wing.
Wow. Okay.
It's been a while since I've talked bike commuting.
Ooh, but I'm gonna bring give it us up. An update.
We're gonna do a little, it's not really an update on that, but I'm gonna complain about other bikers for a second, which Fair is rare enough. Because usually we're anti-car.
I mean, we're always anti-car. We should be clear on the pod, we're always anti-car.
Always anti-car, and there will be a little bit of anti-car bias in this take.
Yep.
Here's what I hate when people do. Okay, so the city that I live in, it's not like the most bike-friendly place, mm-hmm. but there are places like strategically located where if you need to cross a decent-sized street, there's a pedestrian light where you press the button. And it's quite responsive.
Yeah.
And after you press it, after a few seconds, it'll put a flashing red light, mm-hmm. and bikes and pedestrians can go across.
Yeah.
A lot of bikers, I think, are trying to be passive to cars, and they will come up to these lights and they will not press the button so that they can wait for
what?
A space.
No.
Because and it's no, you have to press the button. These are the traffic rules. That's what people do.
Yeah.
And then here's the thing, because this is where I'm going to extend it beyond this.
Yeah.
Okay. Because this confuses cars.
Yes. Yes,
because
exactly.
Cars are this person is now waiting for me.
Yep.
I'm going to stop. But then it's a four-lane traffic road. And so one car stops, but then I'm not going to go because I don't know if the other lane is going to stop. And it's just a mess.
Yeah.
It's an absolute mess.
Right.
What you have to do as a biker or as a car in a car bike interaction, mm-hmm. is be predictable. That's all it is.
Yes.
It's about predictability in traffic.
Yes. 100%. 100%.
Just follow the rules.
Luke, but here's the problem. Here's the thing, Luke. I think this is a problem of we're going to go an even level deeper here in our urban podcast that we love to do, which is this is a problem of traffic management. This is not a problem of bikers not hitting a button, cuz I will say it's a little annoying to have to it's hard sometimes to stand with your bike in between your legs and reach over and hit a button if you're not perfectly in the right spot. So instead, I think that the solution would be to just have traffic engineers have a different solution that it just can tell if there's a biker there waiting with an IR sensor or some kind of a thing to just see if there's a biker there waiting, and then it automatically turns the lights on. You don't have to push a button or anything. Maybe they leave the button even as a way to be sure, if the sensor doesn't work, you can hit the button. But point is, there's a different solution that takes into account how people already engage with this crossing. Now, that being said, this frustrates the hell out of me. A part of me understands it, because if I am flying down a hill and there's a stop sign at the very bottom and there's no cars coming, am I gonna stop on my bike? No, I am not. I am going through that stop sign, especially if it's a four-way stop. There's no cars around. I can see clearly there's no cars coming. I'm going right through because I'm not losing all that momentum. Are you kidding me? No. We're saving.
Right. If you have to, restarting momentum on a bike is very tough.
It sucks. It's not fun. Especially if you're not electronic, if you're doing it analog. However, the problem is cars don't expect me to stop. So when I get to...
I know exactly what you're going
to
say.
When I get to a stop sign and there are cars there, I treat it like I pretend like I'm a car, because that is what you're supposed to do in this situation. So I stop at the stop sign and I look at the car that's been waiting there, and I'm like, okay, now go. And they don't go. They're motioning me to go. And then I'm looking at the car across the way being like, okay, well, are they going to stop too? And we're all taking an extra like 30 seconds for me to make sure none of you guys are going to hit me with your cars. On top of this, cars are not using their blinkers at all in my city. Using a blinker is like a 1 in 10 chance that somebody will even use one, which is so much lower than anywhere else I've lived. Anyway. So this is like the part of it that is really annoying if people aren't predictable.
Yes.
Okay.
I will tell you, this is where I was going to take this, is stop signs, four-way stops, because yes, cars will try to be nice to me by letting me go, but they will often, even like worse than what you're saying, often they will not signal to me. They will not like wave their arm. They'll just like wait. And I'm like, I'm not going to go.
Yes.
Because if I go and you go, I die. So like, I'm literally not going to go until I'm absolutely sure that you're not going to.
I don't think people in cars understand the consequences of a collision between me and them. Like, I don't think they get it, what's going on here in this interaction. Because like, I don't know if I've mentioned this on the pod, but I've been hit by a car as a biker. Very unpleasant, I will say. The craziest part about this, and I may have told this story before because it's so insane. I go to the hospital after getting hit by this car, and the doctor is like actively putting stitches in my chin. And she says to me, she's like, "What happened?" And I'm like, "Oh, I got hit by a car. I was riding my bike." And she was like, "Oh yeah, where were you riding? Some of those bikers on university are crazy." And I'm like, "Ma'am, you are actively repairing my body from a collision with a car. Can you, for a second, put yourself into the biker's shoes? Like, I get that you drive everywhere. I get that that's your deal and you love it. But like, I was just hit by a car. The person who was in the car is fine, by the way. They're not here. They've driven off already. But I'm in the hospital with a potential concussion. Like, can we please?
Oh my God.
Can you please not right now?
You had not told me that part of it. That's wild.
It was insane. It was, I wanted to be like, well, yeah, but the consequences.
That's me. You're talking about me.
Talking about me. And also, I was in the right of way. Like, that lady got a ticket from a cop because she blew through a stop sign. So.
Brutal.
Yeah, it was biker's rights, man. I think we need more biker's rights. The real thing about this, Luke, that I think about all the time is we need bikes to just be as dangerous to cars as cars are to bikes. And then I think we get these problems solved so much quicker. Like, I'm carrying around a big propane tank with me when I'm cycling around everywhere.
To explode?
Yeah. Just like, hey, I'm taking you guys with me.
I like it.
Or like a medieval lance, you know?
Oh, here we go. Okay.
That way it's clear, like, look, you can get in front of me, but like, you're going to get lanced. That's going through your window. Yes.
That's a good one. Okay. Here's one thing I want to be as, fair to cars as I can.
And balanced.
Fair and balanced, yes. Never say that we're not. The people that wait at a stop sign for me, I kind of understand. I'm still frustrated with it, but I kind of understand.
Good intentions.
Because good intentions, and also I live near a big university, and like, people are like, undergrad people biking to class can be stupid. And so like, I understand if you're gonna wait at that stops. At the stoplight, like on camp, or the stop sign on campus, because you don't know if I'm like a 19-year-old hooligan. I get that. Still, just motion for me. Just tell me to go ahead of time.
Would be nice.
Okay. Biking's awesome, by the way.
Yeah, I'm truly a big fan of it. It also makes me feel really justified. There's this great biking route near me. It's like a federal road, so it's low speed limit, and technically bikes are allowed to take up the full lane.
Nice.
It's like really beautiful, but everybody speeds on it.
Oh.
Which is really annoying. And so what I do whenever I drive on it, we're always riding the speed limit, baby.
Going so slow. Yes.
People are getting a little upset. I'm getting past, but I'm like, nah.
I don't know. I've always driven kind of slow. That's just who I am naturally. But I think ever since biking, I drive even slower, and not necessarily as a conscious thing, but I'm just like, yeah, why would I go fast?
Yeah. You don't need to. Here's the secret. You don't need to, guys.
You actually do not need to.
It actually doesn't save you much time at all, surprisingly.
Like, at all. You'd be shocked.
Yeah.
Okay. That's enough biking for now.
Let's talk dragons and horny teens.
That's right. We have finished Fourth Wing. Let me start us out with something small and dumb.
Yeah.
Zayden is asked his favorite food.
Oh yeah.
Do you remember what he says? Favorite food, mind you.
Oh.
Is chocolate cake. Disqualifying.
No! What? No! There are categories! This is so... Okay, now that you mention this, I can't believe I didn't pick this up. This is insane.
The favorite food? No, I probably wouldn't have said anything if it was like, what's your favorite dessert? Chocolate
yes.
cake?
No, no, no.
Like, it's
yes.
kind of a weird choice, yes. but like, fine. But favorite food is crazy.
Yes. What?
That's not what I'm asking. Obviously, I didn't mean cake.
Because, okay, listen. And I think this is the problem that you're having that I'm just now realizing I'm having. There is favorite food and favorite dessert. And these are completely different categories.
Yeah, I would never think of dessert if you were asking me favorite food. And even then, it's even if someone was like, no, I thought about like the full category of things that you consume as physical objects like food, and I chose chocolate cake. I would still have a problem with that because like that's just a dumb choice. What do you mean your favorite food is chocolate cake? That's crazy.
But Luke, okay, hold on though. Because here's my thing. I think a lot of people when they say favorite food, the common scenario everyone goes with is you get to eat one thing for the rest of your life. What's that one thing going to be? And I think you pick chocolate cake, you're a psycho. We're using a different word. We've used psycho too much on this pod recently. You're crazy. You're not thinking straight if you choose chocolate cake because you get sick of that in 20 minutes.
Yeah, chocolate cake is like give me a small slice of chocolate cake.
Yeah. Now,
I'll take the rest home for tomorrow, maybe.
There is another way of interpreting the question though, Luke, and that is, what is your favorite food to eat any portion of? And in that case, I think chocolate cake is a perfectly valid answer because I think it holds a very particular nostalgia for people. It's always associated with like birthdays. I think just that first bite of chocolate cake can really take people places. So I have no problem with it from that respect. But I still think dessert falls in a different category than food because when I'm seeing food, I'm talking about you're having a meal, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You're never having a meal that's chocolate cake. I'm sorry.
Right. Can I bring you to kind of the bigger context that I think this falls into,
mm-hmm.
which is the character that we have here, which is Zayden. In every interaction, our author, Rebecca, has tried to make him as cool and sexy as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of early in their like flirtatious era.
Like phase. Yeah.
And like, it's just not a sexy answer, I think, is my final critique. What's your favorite food? Chocolate cake? Ah, I'm out.
I will say if he'd have said red velvet, I think it would have been way sexier.
Definitely sexier.
Mm-hmm.
Chocolate cake is just like, well, okay, that's kind of a weird.
What are you, like what are you that kid Matilda?
Anyway, That's my note to get us kicked off.
Okay. are we a little disappointed in Violet's power?
The lightning?
Yeah.
Yes, I have this note as well.
Okay. Because everyone else has powers that are like kind of rad. Obviously, ice powers are middle of the road, But powers of like teleportation, astral projection, like those are rad as hell. Like those powers have a lot of applications to it. Lightning powers are just like, hey, when I come, I can blast your windows out really good. And like that feels like the only reason for it.
Yes, 100%. It's not interesting. It's actually, everybody knows this, all the elemental powers are the same power level. So like, I think lightning and ice are like same tier.
Except,
do you agree?
Well, no. Because like, in this world, the lightning powers seem to be way more powerful. Like, she seems to be able to really blast people with it. Whereas the ice guys are just like, ice beam. Or whatever. And it's not really that good. They're throwing like ice rocks at people, like little pebbles.
No, I saw some ice lances out here.
Sure, but like a full bolt of lightning.
Fine. Fine.
So maybe I think in this universe, like,
it's worse than fire.
What? Fire's the worst, Luke. Your dragon already does fire. No, your dragon already does fire, Luke. Fire is not it.
Okay. You're right. I apologize.
Come on.
It's redundant.
It's a hat on a hat. Almost literally.
Okay. I apologize. You're absolutely right. My other thing with this that keeps coming up throughout this section is that she sucks at aiming the lightning.
Yeah.
Lightning's the easiest one to aim.
What? Because
it's like instantaneous.
What are you talking
about? Just give me like light. Listen, okay. Lightning's the instantaneous one that is not affected by like wind and such. So like
you're
boom,
saying, okay,
I want to hit that thing. I've hit it with lightning.
Luke, you. Oh my gosh. Okay, I get what you're saying. That it is like from origin to destination, it's the fastest traveling and it isn't really impacted by like weather conditions. However, she's not like from what I understand of how this works, she's not like transporting, she's not like pointing and having lightning go in that direction. She is trying to control a lightning strike from the sky to a thing.
But she's creating the lightning strike. Right?
Yes. But like, I don't. Okay, here's the thing. She's not throwing it though, right? Like, if you're doing an ice lance, I feel like you're kind of throwing an ice lance or a fireball.
Yeah.
But she's not throwing lightning. She's trying to guide this sort of organic lightning bolt. It's not a straight line. Like, it doesn't move in a straight line. This is the whole conflict when she had the little baby golden dragon freeze time so she could like guide the lightning bolt to make the connection.
Okay, but this is the problem here is that just our author has never didn't really like explain how this works.
For sure.
And so she didn't like talk about how she's trying to aim it. But in my mind, even with what you're saying, which is like if you're trying to control the lightning that comes from like a bolt of lightning that comes from the sky, even that I'm like, well, I want it to hit here.
Yeah.
So it's going to start up there and it's going to hit here.
It does feel like something that like if you can't aim it, it's basically useless. So I agree with you. It feels like she needed to be trained a lot more than everybody else.
Right.
But okay. I just think my main thing here is just I'm disappointed. I'm like, I get it. It's big and powerful and violent. And that's great for when she's doing it with Zayden and they can like start fires and destroy shit. But when you're on a battlefield or even just like using your powers for general cool stuff, it's not very cool.
Yeah. And it's not what I was expecting in a way that it's like a raw power thing and not like a interesting intellectual application of something.
Correct. Right.
Okay. She does use it to strike your guy Jack though. And I'm being intentionally careful with my words here because I'm not saying kill.
Yep. Very good, Luke.
Because we did not see a body.
No body. Jack's alive. Also, she said he would show up on the death rolls. We never heard them call his name on the death rolls.
Yeah, this is the most clear, like, this boy's still alive, for sure.
Can I say this
too? Which means that he can still bond the gold dragon.
It's going to happen, Luke. It's going to happen. Also, Luke, we're skipping way ahead here to the end, but like, we knew the brother was alive the whole time, right?
Ooh, I didn't actually. This shocked me.
I wasn't going to say it because it felt like too real of a theory, but brother had to be alive the whole time.
Okay. Were there clues that you were picking up on, or was it just vibes based?
The only reason I was pretty sure it was going to happen is because it would have been a crazy cool reveal. And they never found a body.
Mm-hmm. It's it never fails. If you don't see a body, still alive, yeah, for sure.
Still alive for sure. Also, it makes it so that the rebels are like not bad at all.
Right.
It makes it to where like the rebels are actually so purely good that now we're totally on board with them.
Yeah, it's not even like a gray character thing.
No. No.
It's just like, oh, well, they were clearly the good guys
the whole time.
The whole time. Yeah. Okay. Did you want to stay there? It's at the end.
I think we should stay with the rebels here because.
Okay.
Did you understand the whole like scars thing for Zayden? So Zayden's got 107 scars because he's responsible for the 107 children of the rebellious leaders of the apostasy or whatever they did.
Right.
And all the other leaders just wanted to kill the children. But Zayden was like, no, I'll be responsible for them.
And all of the people of the like winning nation wanted to kill them.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So like, why did they take this deal? Like what do they gain from being like, okay, but if any of them rebel, we're going to kill you. Like,
this is a good question.
What that doesn't seem like that's going to solve your problem because you were just going to kill him in the first place already.
Right.
So he has nothing to lose by doing this deal and then still rebelling because he's in the same position that he was in before.
Right. Unless they like, because are they low on recruits? I can't remember.
No.
I feel like they're low on dragons.
They're low on dragons. There's like, they lose like 75% of their graduating class every year. If they start to get low on recruits, they could just make things a little easier. Like give them some climbing shoes or something due to the parapet.
Right. This is true.
Or actually give them some kind of instruction instead of just like having them fight for a year or three.
Right. Okay. So there's no way that they're low on recruits. I agree. I mean, okay. So if we're being honest, it's very clearly just a rhetorical thing to make Zayden a good guy. But, if we have to come up with a good reason in hand,
I think the dragons made him do it.
The dragons made them do it. Okay.
So we've been neglecting the dragon politics here. Now, granted, I haven't,
right,
because they're essential to my theory about what's going on. But I think the dragons had some sway here in this decision.
Okay.
And they were like, we like these guys. You can cut that one up a little bit to make him look even cooler. And then just let him live.
Right. I think this is true. I think it's probably also they're like, your recruits have not been super badass yet.
Oh, hell
like,
yeah.
We need to increase the bad. This is why the dragons aren't choosing as many people, because there's not the as good of a badass factor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the dragons were like, let's do a little, find a way to like add badassery and honor in here, because injecting that a little bit might increase our willingness to bond.
So true. So true. They were getting bored. They needed some excitement. This is how they got it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I also like that this actually tracks because the dragons are also the ones that give them their marks.
Yes.
And as we learn at the end, if three of them are together, that one general cannot do his like future sight thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which again, I'm interpreting as the dragons just being like, let's throw a loop. Let's throw some crazy stuff in here.
They didn't actually even have a plan. They were just like, I hate that this guy can see the future.
I want wild cards. Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty weird. Pretty weird thing. Pretty weird power.
Yeah. But it makes sense for like a evil empire for the person in charge to have that power.
Right. But I mean, pretty weird for if more than three are together that it defeats it.
Yeah.
But you never wild card stuff again. Mm. That's all we want. Okay. Do you have more on dragon politics?
I just have a little bit here, Luke. We've got a bit of a bit of a confirmation about something that we had a disagreement about last episode. Did you pick up on this confirmation between the dragons?
Ooh, no.
Okay. I had a serious problem last time because it felt like Zayden was being a little bit too aggressive. And you were like, oh, Tarn will step up if things get out of hand. Tarn explicitly in this section was like, yeah, my first priority is to my dragon mate. So that's why I didn't tell you any of this stuff that I probably should have told you earlier, Violet. But, well, now you know. So.
Right.
Not to say I told you so, Luke, but I told you so.
You did kind of tell me so. He's still defensive of Violet, though.
Yeah, but like when it came down to it, if he had to choose, we know how he's choosing.
Actually, okay. Do you want to talk about? Because I have some notes about this kind of like reveal, and it'd be kind of jumping ahead. But do you want to talk about it now?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay. So we learn basically to sum up that this fairy tale that she is aware of the Venon, who are like evil magic users.
Mm-hmm. We need to put quotes around that, but let's continue.
Right.
we'll get back to that.
They have always been mythological in her mind, and I think in their culture. But we get the reveal that they are a real thing who is attacking everyone outside of their kingdom. And
allegedly.
Allegedly. And their kingdom has been keeping this a secret and not helping anyone just for, I don't know, because it's risky, I guess. A little isolationism.
It's unsure. It's uncertain. But yeah, it feels like because it's risky.
And then, so this is obviously a huge revelation because it makes us the bad guys and the Griffin Riders are very cool and they risk their lives to save civilians and that kind of thing. And it's also the reason why there was the rebellion and, Zayden has not told Violet this and it gets revealed to her before he is ready to tell her.
Yes.
I don't know. Actually, I'm curious what you think about this, because this tension about him lying by omission to her is like
it's huge.
Their big fight for the rest of the book.
Yeah.
And presumably for the next book and the rest of their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's stupid.
This is one of my big notes.
And like, if I was Violet in this scenario, I would have, I think, obviously this is a hypothetical scenario that I've never been in. However, I don't think that I would be mad at all.
No.
Because like, I'd be like, oh, yeah, of course you wouldn't tell me. That would be crazy for you to have already told me that.
Yeah, dude.
I have empathy, and I can put myself in your shoes and understand why you wouldn't tell me that yet. And, like, the fact that Violet gets this upset and, like, feels betrayed is crazy.
Yeah. Yes. 100%. Luke, I think all you have to do is put yourself in the story and ask, at what point should Zayden have told her? Like, at what point? At what point was it like, oh, yeah, this makes sense for him to reveal this important secret to Violet? And then ask yourself the question, would she have been upset at that point? Because I feel like at literally any point that he shared this with her, when they had a level of trust between them, she would have been probably upset about it. Because she would have been like, this is a huge secret that you've kept from me. And it's like, you don't understand how trust works, Violet. Like, you don't understand. Like, it's insane. He's known her for less than a year. And his, like, parents died because of this mission. And for her to expect him to have just revealed this to her is problematic. Hugely problematic. And now I'm on Team Zayden, where I'm like, no, you probably need to take a step back from this relationship and be like, if you are expecting me to potentially betray everyone else in my life for you, that's not the deal that we need to have. That's not the vibe that I would like for us.
Yes. I think my issue with it is, obviously we have the same problem, but like the way that I think that Zayden should take a step back, because I agree with you. If this was me, I'd be like, I don't know if I want to be with you, talking about Violet.
Yeah.
Is because, like, it shows that she is seemingly, like, incapable of putting herself in his shoes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes. Because
it's like, to your point, like, when would he have said this to you? Why would he have said it at that point? Like, how can you not empathize at all with his position on this?
Yeah. Yeah. There are so many reasons for him to have not told her, right? Number one, she's literally the general's daughter, okay? So there's a huge conflict. Number two, her brother was killed in the conflict from her perspective, so she probably has a vendetta. Number three, her best friend can read her mind and has been doing so.
I forgot about that one.
That, to me, is the biggest one where I'm like, how can you not step into Zayden's shoes and be like, I do really trust her, but I don't trust her best friend, so I can't even hint to her that I know something because I don't know the dynamics there between the two of them. And, like, come on, Violet. This is bullshit. Oh.
Also, like, is it kind? Would it honestly maybe be a little bit unfair to tell her
this early on?
Because, like, she's a first year who has just bonded a dragon, and, like, telling her this puts her in a really uncomfortable situation. I don't know. Here's the thing. This reveal has given you someone to be mad at.
Yeah, your mom.
It's not Zayden. It's not Zayden.
Dude, this moment here is what took me from being like, I don't know if Zayden's good for her, to being like, oh, Zayden needs to step away from this as quickly as possible.
Right.
Especially, like, I think now he's in an even worse position, though. Because now he can't really step away. Now he has revealed something to this person. And if he's like, actually, I don't want to date you anymore, then she can use this as leverage to be like, no, we're staying together. Or else I'm going to tell my mom what's been going on.
Right.
Like, this reveal was such a moment of vulnerability that, like, I get that, like, he didn't have control over the reveal.
Yeah.
But, like, I feel like it was imminently approaching.
Like him telling her, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Like relatively quickly, especially considering the fight that they had to go do immediately after the reveal.
Right.
She put him in a position where I feel like the only way he could have navigated it would be to act surprised that the Venon are there. And be like, huh, that's crazy. Maybe we should look into this. And then just like pretend to be finding out all the information for the first time himself as well.
I would have loved that. I would have loved that as the rest of the book. Yeah. I didn't like it. I didn't like that was like the rest of their interactions with, because also now he is in a, because of how he reacts to it, where he also agrees that he's in the wrong, he now feels like he has to make it up to her in like a really groveling way, which is like, this sucks.
Yeah, it's pretty not good.
What did you think about the reveal in general, setting aside their reactions to it?
I think it was kind of cool. This idea that like the history, the generation above them has just changed the history so that they don't even know what's going on in this other country, I think is really a cool idea. It reminds me a little bit of that book. What was it, like The Lost War, The Lost Kingdom? Do you remember that, where they, like, they changed their memories?
I don't remember this.
Anyway, that's kind of a spoiler, I think, so let's not get too much into it, but I thought it was cool. I think we're going to see how it fits into my theory. We might want to get into that. We'll get into my theory in a little bit. I want to give us some time to talk about this reveal here. I thought the I feel like it's weird how good the secret is being kept, though. Did you feel this way?
So I had this thought as well. Well, let me back up for a second, because I agree with what you said. I actually did like the reveal. I liked the big plot twist. I kind of liked the way that her dad was brought into it as well. Now, to your point, it is surprising how well this has worked. I think the explanation for this is geography.
Sure.
Of just like literally, because of the way that these mountains are, like no one can physically cross them that's not like flying on dragon or griffin back. Is that a sufficient explanation for you?
No, because they're interacting with each other. So like these two nations are interacting. They have fights all the time.
Yeah.
I feel like if I am one of the griffin riders and I'm going to one of these towns to try and find some of these knives or this material, I feel like I can have some like conversation with the people there being like, the Venon are killing us right now. Please help us.
Right. And we haven't seen that. Like, I think that not all of the dragon riders know, right? It's just the leadership.
Yeah, I think so. Because Myra doesn't know.
Right. Because she sees wyverns and doesn't realize what's going on.
Right.
Yeah, and this place that they're protecting is like a trading post that presumably there's some kind of interaction, even if it's not like Griffin Rider to Dragon Rider.
Right.
Sorry, Griffin Flyer.
Yep, very good.
To be clear. I feel like if I'm a, like, hey, guys at the trading post, next time you interact with the Dragon Riders, can you just like, you know that there's Venon, right? You know that we fight the Venon. Can you just like let them know, maybe? Bring it up.
Would you mind just like asking if they could help us out a little bit? Seems like they could be a really big help over here.
Yeah,
we give you a discount. Like, we give you a discount if you help us out.
So yeah, I agree with you. Unless the Venon, actually, here's what I think. To save us in world, I think the Venon are smart. And they realize that the Dragon Rider Nation has decided to not help.
Yeah.
And so they are going out of their way
to not
show themselves.
Yeah. I think that's probably true. I think that they're doing that. Yeah. I think that they're doing that intentionally. And I also think it's so that they can build up enough power to create a utopia.
Ooh.
Because okay. Luke, the Venon are the good guys. Let me explain.
Sure.
So we've just learned that there is a group of people who've been ostracized by these two nations in their own little space. Mm-hmm. And they've been mm-hmm. sort of left to fend for themselves. And as a result, these people have innovated to be able to perform magic without needing to bond to a dragon or a griffin.
Mm-hmm. Well, pause.
Mm-hmm.
Because according to our knowledge, they were ostracized because of their adoption of magic without the riders.
Yeah, that's propaganda from the from the nations that have ostracized them.
Okay, I'm willing to accept that.
Now, here's why that matters, Luke. These nations both tie rider and creature together in a way that neither of them can live without each other.
Mm-hmm.
The Venon aren't like that, okay? The Venon are not forcing this bond in order to access magic. They're not requiring you to tie your mortal life to the life of a dragon. Essentially, get married to a dragon that you don't know to be able to cast Fireball. Okay?
Right.
We also, like, sure, they look a little weird. Come on. Is that a reason to dislike them? Also, we see them attack this outpost, right?
Mm-hmm.
If we are correct, if some of what we've been led to believe is true, the Griffin Riders have been attacking outposts as well.
Right.
Because they have things that the Griffin Riders need to defeat the Venon.
Yes.
So just because the Venon are attacking an outpost to get something that they need, that does not make them the bad guys here.
I see. Well, it does not differentiate themselves from the others.
Sure.
Attacking the outpost is still bad.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily worse than what the Griffin Riders or potentially even the Dragon Riders are doing.
Right.
We're not sure.
Right. And now, Luke, I want you to think about the types of people that can have access to magic in the Venon Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
Those types of people being anyone who has a will to power. Anyone who works hard enough and really desires it. Now, who is...
Theoretically,
sure,
I will say.
Well, given what we know now, that seems to be the case, right? You just have to have the drive.
Sure.
Who are the people... Who are the people, at least that we know of in the Dragon Kingdom, who get access to magic? The most ruthless ones, the ones that the dragons pick as like, oh yeah, you're a killer. These are the ones who get access to magic. Not the scribes, okay? Not the healers. The most ruthless killers get access to magic.
Right.
That does not sound like a recipe for a good time.
You're not wrong. Right. Yes.
Now, we're gonna get to my theory, Luke, because it ties in. There's a level deeper here. We thought the theory was just gonna be our, you know, Violet had to die so that this secret didn't get revealed. No.
Mm-hmm.
That's not why Violet's mom was trying to get her killed by sending her to dragon school. We thought that our empire was the bad guys, or was the good guys. And the Griffin Flyers were the bad guys. And now there's sort of been a reversal where the Griffin Riders are the good guys, our empire are bad, but the Venon are the worst. No. The Venon are the good guys. And I think Violet and her dragon have the opportunity to tip the scales once she does her own research and joins the Venon.
Okay. Do you have... You're just basing this on what you've already discussed, right?
Mostly. Yeah. Now,
okay.
Luke, what did her dad's notes say? because this is important here. Her dad's note.
I don't remember word for word.
Her dad's note essentially said that fairy tales are how we record history, right? Mm-hmm. That like that we can look to these fables to tell us something about our past.
Right.
Doesn't mean necessarily that they're literal, right? Like, sure, we've seen literal venom.
Yeah.
But the story was about two brothers ostracizing the third.
This is true. This is true. Yes.
We got to bring that third back into the fold, guys.
I'm with you here. Yeah.
It upsets the established order. That's why the general who can see the future doesn't want it. Because he's living large. He gets to have a party every year with the king and a bunch of young, hot dragon riders. Oh, a little creepy, buddy.
Right. Yes. Okay. I will also say the Vinnin are the main fairy tale thing that we have heard. Mm-hmm. But... And like, she only got this book just because, like, this is just a book that, she has always had.
Yeah.
But, like, if a generation decides to change history mm-hmm. and, like, burn all the books, all this stuff, you have no idea where it ends, right? You can't be like, oh, I figured out the Vinnin are real. That's probably all. There could be anything going on.
You're saying there's yetis in the mountains?
Yetis in the mountains. For sure. They're at like mid-altitude because no one goes there.
Right. They're always either at the top or the bottom.
But if I'm her now, when things calm down a little bit, I'm like, give me every fairy tale you've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we're going to explore what's going on with it.
She's got to be scouring libraries at the ends of the earth. Right, she needs to be going to libraries in other countries. Oh, she needs to get to the library in this new nation.
Yes. Yes, please.
Oh, that's going to be a great few chapters, huh?
The next two books are just book hunting for me. If her and Zayden can patch it up, mm-hmm. the next two books for me, just a romantic adventure where they're looking for old books.
Mm. Going to old libraries, estate sales.
That's right.
Amazing.
Yeah, because anything's out there, folks. Mm. Let's have a chat with the Vinnin as well.
See what they're up to. See why they're doing this.
Yeah. Maybe the eye thing is just an aesthetic choice.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I like the theory. So, okay, can we go back a little bit?
Yeah.
Because I skipped over some stuff. people will realize that we have not talked about the sex scenes yet.
Do we have to, Luke?
We don't have to go in detail, but we do have to acknowledge it because that's the point of this book, is these sex scenes, I imagine. Much more explicit than I was expecting.
Ooh, yeah.
I will say
I was surprised in the acknowledgments for her to thank the Heavenly Father first after reading the explicitness of these sex scenes.
Right. Pretty intense. That's probably not an area where our podcast shines, so we won't have to talk about it a ton
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But we have to acknowledge it.
Yeah, the level of detail was very surprising for me.
And I imagine that's the big draw of the book, why it has so many reads, so many reviews.
Maybe.
Potentially.
You saying people don't like
Now
dragons,
I have a dumb
Luke?
One. Now right. Now I have a small note.
Okay.
Because I'm gonna roast the school one more time.
Yeah.
Okay.
I love it.
So mid-sex scene.
Yeah.
They get interrupted.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's an alert or an alarm, yes, I should call it, that they're under attack and they're freaking out. And everyone lines up and they're like, oh man, we're gonna die because we have to fight now. And then they're like, oh, it's just a drill. I find this very stupid. Because, like, now people, they're going to be like, if you do another alarm, they're going to be like, oh, it's probably just a drill. Like, there is a reason that if you work at a school or whatever, they're like, we're going to have a fire alarm on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because they want you to know that it's an alarm and it's a practice. If you have an alarm that people don't know about, it like diminishes readiness, right? Because people are like, this is probably just an alarm.
Right. Next time Violet and Zayden are boning and somebody's like, there's an alarm. Come on, we got to get down there. They're going to be like, no. We're going to finish what we're doing.
Right. They're going to be like, this is only going to take a few more minutes. We'll be out soon.
Oh, it's not going to take a few minutes, Luke. Come on. Are you serious? Were you reading the same? Were you skipping pages, Luke?
I was not skipping pages. Damn, listen, nose to page for me.
Oh, that's a little too close, I think. You get a little wet if you get your nose that close.
Anyway, I hated it. I hate the school. The school's stupid. The teachers are bad at things.
Yeah. Luke, I want to point out something that's really interesting about this book, and I think it's a consequence of how this book works. And that is that literally no one else has a romantic relationship in this book.
Right.
Because I don't think it's possible in the context. Because imagine you're at this school and there's a girl that you really like and you ask her out. You guys start dating, and then Zayden and Violet walk by, and they're like mind melded, having like loud lightning bolt sex throughout the building, like constantly smoldering, looking at each other. And you look at this girl and she looks at you and you're like, are we actually in love, or is that? Because they look like they're in love, but like, we're not really feeling that. I feel like in comparison, no one else at this school can have a real, like, serious relationship, because by comparison, it looks like nothing. It looks like it's not real to what's going on with Zayden and Violet.
I see your point. I agree that it's hard to compete on those metrics.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly. I will say, if I was in the scenario that you're describing as one a guy that's seeing another girl,
yeah,
let's say, I feel like I would be like joking with my partner, being like, that's not going to end well. Am I right?
Yes. And this is exactly where I think this is the only way that it works, is everyone's got to be shit talking them the whole time. Like, the shit talk has got to be constant.
I mean, like, okay, to be clear, yes, everybody is talking about them, but I don't think that it discourages other people from dating.
Right.
I think if anything, it could encourage it, because everyone's like, that's crazy, right?
Hey, I heard that they, like, talk telepathically to each other and can read each other's thoughts. That's so fucked, right?
I just want you to know that I respect your privacy. Hey, unlike them.
I heard they can't be apart more than 3 days before their dragons, like, freak out. Get some space is nice sometimes.
Doesn't that sound like an uncomfortable relationship that we as two healthy people probably shouldn't follow?
And we can be, like, secure and stable in our relationship to where we don't need to be around each other at 24 hours, 24/7?
Right, right.
Like, you can take a trip with your friends for, like, a couple weeks to a different country, and, like, that'll be totally fine.
Well, not a different country.
Okay, fair.
Because, but yes, your point stands.
The shit talk has got to be constant, yeah.
Yeah.
I wish we'd have gotten some of that, honestly. Like, I think that would have made the book a little more real. Like, I think it would have made the book a little bit more interesting if we got a little bit of shit talk from two people that are in a normal relationship, pointing yeah. out the fact that this relationship is batshit crazy. Like, this relationship is insane in so many metrics and not right. a real relationship. Like, maybe a little nod to the reader of like, hey, reader, there is no such, this relationship is so much a fantasy. Let me just quickly point that out. Let me just quickly be like, hey, yeah, this is crazy.
That would have been nice. Yes.
Would have been cool to see, I thought.
Would have been cool. And I think there's a lot of good characters that could have done that as well.
Absolutely.
Because we get some nods to people like hooking up.
Mm-hmm.
But it is always kind of implied, because it's from Violet's perspective, that they're like kind of shallow relationships.
Yeah. Well, Luke, I also just want to point out, literally no other relationships. Her mom and dad not together anymore. Her siblings not in a relationship. I guess the only one we see is when she goes to visit the niece of Rhiannon.
Right, yeah.
Otherwise, we do not see two people who are like married or even dating for a long period of time. Everyone is single in this world except for Violet and Zayden.
Yes. No role models. Mm. That's the problem.
Ah, maybe that's it.
Probably. Yeah, it's pretty, I don't know, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
It also, I will also say, let's not talk about this for too long because we've been on it for a while, but before the reveal, when they're on this mission,
mm-hmm.
this quote-unquote mission, because at the time they think that it's fake, but it's still like dangerous, right? We immediately get like an example as to why a first year should not be dating their wing leader, because like she goes on this dangerous mission with him. He's completely distracted. He changes the mission because of her. And then they like get to this outpost and he goes and like massages her legs and they start like making out a little bit. And it's like, hello, we are on a very important mission. This is like a huge risk. Absolutely not. Fired. Like, genuinely, Zayden no longer wing leader because completely irresponsible. They get snuck up on by, like, I realize that it worked out okay because they're actually allies, but, like, the Griffin Riders got the drop on them because of this.
Yeah. you're very correct. You're very correct here. And it feels like it's sort of Zayden's responsibility to recognize that his leadership is compromised and let somebody else make decisions now.
Right.
If he wants to do this, which he can, you're perfectly within your rights to date a first year if you want, but like you can't be in charge of that first year and take her on all your missions right. with you. That's no, you can't do that.
You cannot.
If you're dating the TA doesn't get to do all your homework and your tests for you. And then also like do the experiment. Okay. That's not how it works.
Way to bring it back to something that we can relate to.
Not, well, we should say, not personally. I've never done that.
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad. But okay, the last thing that I was going to talk about is the actual like fight scene.
Mm-hmm. With the Wyverns and the Venom.
The Wyverns, the Venom, the Griffin Riders, everybody's involved.
Yep.
It's a whole mess. There's tons of Wyvern.
Yeah.
I thought it was a good... I liked reading the fight scene. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, me too.
Huge bummer about Liam.
Very
sad.
The best. The best of us, truly.
Truly the best of us. Should have been wing leader.
Honestly?
The thing that I'm confused by is... So you can only kill the Venom with a specific material that they have used to make these daggers.
Yeah.
But at the end, Violet kills one with a lightning strike to the head.
Uh-huh.
What's the deal?
Mm.
Is she just a really special girl?
Mm. Was it that the lightning killed the Wyvern? that was bonded to it?
It killed the Vinon, because the wyverns die when the Vinon dies, not the vice versa.
Yeah, you're right. Okay. I think she's just the specialist girl.
Okay.
I think that's it. I think that's the only possible answer, because they've already tried blowing them up and that didn't work.
Right.
Maybe this is
just... We've said this is the only way to kill them.
Yeah. Maybe that's just their weak typing matchup. Right? Weak to lightning. Strong to fire, okay. Weak to lightning.
Oh, so you're saying... You're like, they were not... They were saying impossible, like figuratively, mm-hmm. just because they have, like, 99% resistance to everything.
Yeah.
Except for lightning.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also... Yeah,
probably.
Guys, like, these were fairy tales 10 minutes ago to most, or at least to Violet. So, like, how can you be so confident in this knowledge? Ah, I think we got to do a little more research, frankly. Right. Maybe we shouldn't have burned all our books with, like, the vulnerabilities of the Vinon.
I hope that they at least kept one of every copy. or one copy of every book.
Luke, they can't. And do you know why? Because every year they release a bunch of first years to go find whatever valuable shit they can in this military base.
True.
And if there's a risk that they find like a trove of documents that are like in the year 450 AB, the Vinon attacked and caused mass casualties, they're like, what is this?
Right. True. Okay. You think it's just okay, but going back to my original question,
yeah.
it could just be they're super weak to lightning. Could also just be headshots.
Oh, maybe headshots. Yeah,
you can either use a dagger or get a headshot in.
Uh-huh.
I think those are the only options.
Daggers or headshots. Yeah, I agree. That seems right to me.
Okay. What do you got? You got any more notes on this?
Let's go reviews.
Okay.
I'll start.
Okay.
I thought this book was entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
I think what you said last time, I don't remember if that was on or off air, but I think this book is entertaining. I like the first two thirds of this book way more than the last third of this book, because I think there was something to be said for the tension between Zayden and Violet that felt
mm-hmm.
somewhat manufactured, but also somewhat real in the sort of flirtatiousness to it. And then when they broke that tension by finally like taking their relationship to the next step, let's say,
mm-hmm.
the next sort of barrier that went up, the next source of tension, felt so contrived to me that it really like took away from the last third of the book.
You're talking about what we've already discussed, which is
yes,
her being mad at
the
him.
The fact that she's mad at him feels so dumb, and
uh-huh.
like it feels like we can't have any gray area here. Like characters, like what I mean by that is she sees Zayden as a gray character because he's lied to her about this. As an audience, I don't think any single person reading this sees him as a gray character. Like, I don't think anybody can really read this and be like, oh yeah, Zayden was in the wrong.
Right. Sound off in the comments, but yes, I agree.
I just think that, like, no rational person is going to read that and be like, oh yeah, he should have told her earlier. Like, he did a bad thing. No. Zayden is, like, a good guy to the extreme. To the level that's, like, superhuman. And the fact that our main character doesn't see it is sort of infuriating to me.
Right.
Maybe that's by design. Maybe that's like how these books work. I just think it's sort of weird how much this book revolves around them having tension in their relationship. Like, I think this is just like a stylistic thing with romance books, but with fantasy books, there's a quest. There's always a quest that someone's going on, and that's the book. With this, it's like these two people, are they gonna or are they not gonna? And that's like the
right
that always has to be there for there to be a book.
Right. I agree with you that like the tension between them for the first half or maybe two thirds of the book, I think was good. I think half of the first half of the book. And the new source of tension is terrible and stupid. That's one of my qualms. I'll say something similar, which is I did find it entertaining. I think the world is really cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that the like situation that we've found ourselves in is cool. So like big picture ideas I like a lot. I think for one thing, obviously, elephant in the room, Luke and Dan, not the target audience for this.
Seems like not.
I'm sure a lot of people get a lot more entertainment at the sex scenes than you and I did. That's understandable. I think I had some qualms with the like development of our main character, Violet, which is, as we've discussed, she's the most special girl.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we've heard all the time about like how great she is, but I've never really seen it. Like, I'm not necessarily saying that I don't like Violet or that she's bad or anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, people say that she's like the smartest ever. I haven't seen her do anything like noticeably smart.
Well, she poisoned all those people instead of fighting them, so.
Yeah, but that's.
I know. I'm just kidding.
And like, there's some examples of her like coming up with deductions.
Yeah.
That I'm just like, yeah, obviously. Like, she comes up like kind of late in the battle. She's like, oh, if we kill the Vinnin, all the Wyverns will die. It's like, yeah. Didn't like we figure that out already? Everybody already knew that, I think. And like, I don't really get why Zayden is so into her. Also, it just felt like we were like, oh, it would be super, like, it's super attractive when the attractive person is into you.
Yeah.
But like, I don't think that the work was done to make it make sense that Zayden was so into her.
He claims from day one, too, which I...
Right.
That's not it. From day one. It can't be from her trying to cross the parapet and he's like, that sickly looking weak girl, I am in love with her now.
Right. There's no... I don't think that there was any work done in showing us that Violet was so special. We were just told that she was so special, I think is the issue. Critics might say that she defended the gold dragon, but it's like, yeah, come on. Same. but okay. Other than that, entertained by it.
Mm-hmm.
As we've discussed, I forget if we said this also off air or not, but big contrast with the most recent Brandon Sanderson book, where I appreciated how quickly we moved through things. Mm-hmm. Like, it didn't feel like we were lingering unnecessarily.
Agreed. Yeah. I honestly was surprised we got to a sex scene in the first book. I was like, she's going to stretch this tension out into the second book.
This is actually, yes, I agree with you. If we're going to talk about our preferences in a romance novel, I think, yeah, the tension got cut too soon. I thought we were going to build up for much longer.
Hmm. Luke's a sex scene at the very end, maybe. School.
That's right. Famously, I am.
Yeah, so I was surprised, but I feel like, yeah, we're moving fairly quick.
Yeah.
It's just maybe we moved a little too quick and we fell flat on our face at the end into some stupid bullshit.
Maybe, yes.
Who can say, though?
Yeah. Because there's two more books. I don't think that I could read. I'm already sick of the two of them together because of the turn that we've taken. So unless there's a change, unless there's a new Dane 2.0 comes back better than ever, maybe.
He's even more ripped and he's got a cool tattoo now.
Mm. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And he smokes even cooler cigarettes. He's got a leather jacket. Oh, wait, no, they all have leather jackets.
Ah, shit.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah, probably going to leave this series behind. Who knows if we'll come back, but it's looking like probably not. Unless there's high demand for it, unless the people need it. We're going to move on, Luke. First, a couple of announcements. We're taking next week off.
Yep.
But the week after that, Luke, we are reading Dungeon Crawler Carl by Matt Dinneman.
Nice. Nice. Finally, we get to a lit RPG book.
Yeah. It's been a while, actually.
excited for that. We're gonna try to do halves. Mm-hmm. So we do have 2 weeks to read the first half, since we're taking next week off.
That's right.
But yeah.
So enjoy it. If you want to spend the next week reading the rest of the Hot Dragon Sex series, do it and give us a book report. Happy to hear if they get any better.
Let us know if there's any human on dragon action.
Gross. I don't let Luke know. You can private message Luke on the Discord if that happens. Not me. I don't want to know about it.
Okay. That's fine.
But Luke, we'll be back in 2 weeks bringing the hot takes
and being dumb nerds.